Hello and welcome to the Bingeables podcast, a podcast for geeky TV junkies where we watch TV shows you just have to binge on. We're your hosts, Chinlin
and Asha.
Welcome back to the Bingeables podcast, Asha.
Thank you.
We're here to talk about the Apple TV workplace gaming comedy, Mythic Quest.
Warning, this episode contains spoilers, but if you haven't seen the show and you're curious about it, check out our spoiler-free preview.
Oh, thanks for plugging the last episode. All right, so we're just going to dive right in. The way I have this set up is I'll talk about, like, I'll have a section on, like, favorite episodes, and then we'll end with, like, things we didn't like about the show. But if you think of anything, feel free to just chime in and you know, interrupt me. This can be a free-flowing kind of conversation.
Cool.
All right, so favorite episodes. I broke it down by season, so I'll start with season one. The third episode is called Dinner Party.
You did that really well.
you can't say dinner party without doing the poppy voice and the jazz hands.
Yes. No, you nailed it.
Okay, you try.
Dinner party.
Oh, I like yours.
Thank you.
So, I remember you telling me via text before we recorded a few weeks ago how you actually watched the first two episodes and you weren't a fan, but you went back to give it another chance. So the third episode you actually did enjoy, and it was enough to get you to binge the rest.
Yeah, I'm going to hand it to Dinner Party because I did really enjoy it.
Okay, so why do I like this episode? Okay, first of all, like I just said, you can't say dinner party without doing the jazz hands because Poppy, she comes up with the dinner party feature, and it's supposed to, like, be more engaging and bring groups together in the game. Now, what happens is that these modern neo-Nazis decide to use it to spread their hate language.
Yeah, and it really gets crazy from there. They just overrun the whole game.
Yeah, exactly. And we meet a supporting character named Sue. Sue is the community manager, and it's hilarious the first time you meet her because she's at the very bottom level of the building. So you open up the elevator doors, and you just walk out, and it looks like this clean, sterile hallway, like a hospital kind of hallway, and the lights kind of flicker a little bit, and you're just like, what is going on? It's the complete opposite of the main floor where everyone else is, right? And you're expecting to see, like, this person. Okay, so what is a community manager in this case? It's someone who handles the comments online and, like, brings up any issues from the players to the people who make the game.
Can I also mention that Sue described her job as whenever kids hate their mom and then they yell into their pillow, and she described herself being the mom and the pillow.
Oh my god, yes. Sue is just an underrated supporting character, I feel like.
Absolutely.
She shows up in enough episodes throughout the two seasons, but I feel like she's a supporting character, so she's not always there, right? She's so underrated, she's hilarious, and she's just one of those people, and we can all relate to this, regardless of the workplace you're at. She's one of those workers who is always trying to stay positive and optimistic despite everything that happens, and she just uses the most, what's the word? Positive language, even though you can tell based on the tone of her voice that it is not positive.
Yeah, you can tell she's really trying to keep it together. She's really trying to not come unhinged. But she is great. And like Chinlin said, she is very underrated, but I wish she showed up more in the series.
So my favorite part of this episode, dinner party, is when she calls Ian. And, you know, Ian is in his office. He's talking to Poppy and David and whatnot. Ian does this thing where he likes to quote-unquote noodle on an idea, right? And he's, like, thinking of this idea of, like, how to get rid of the Nazis in the game. And he's like, what if we use them? I forgot what exactly he was proposing. But Sue on the camera is like, it sounds like you're adding to the number of Nazis in the game, and what we need to do is subtract. And then he's just like spitting out more ideas, and like he's trying to justify what he's talking about, and her face gets all like serious, and she goes up to the camera, so you just see her nose and her eyes, and she's like, you need to fix this. By end of day, zero Nazis. We need zero Nazis.
You do her accent very well, too.
I'm not even trying. I'm really not.
So how did you feel about the solution that they came up with?
I thought it made sense because it's a slippery slope. Because, like, you can't just exclude one group, because then other groups will feel like, I don't know. It's the whole thing in the conference room where they were trying to come up with all the groups that they should exclude.
Right.
Yeah. I think it was a smart move, trying just like keeping them in their own echo chamber.
Yeah. No, I loved that. I thought it was really funny. And then just the ending scene when they have to just label their tiny server Nazi prison.
That was amazing. You know, I wonder if this has happened in real life to a bunch of other games.
That's a good observation. I'm probably gonna have to Google that later.
Okay, yeah, because I don't keep up with enough gaming news, but it feels like something realistic that could happen.
Absolutely, yeah.
Fucking Nazis. They ruin everything.
They do, it's true.
My next favorite episode is episode 5, named A Dark, Quiet Death. So this is the one where you have a story within a story, where it kind of starts off where you're not sure what's going on. You're thinking, wait, am I watching the right show? I chose Mythic Quest, right? Because this doesn't look like Mythic Quest to me. But then you get the connection at the very end, what's going on. I like this one because, like I said, it's a story within a story, but it's parallel, meaning it's both about gaming companies starting off. In this case, this was one that started off, and obviously Mythic Quest, as we know, is already well established when we start watching the show. But the main connection is that the company that backs up the company that produces the game is Montreal. They just say Montreal.
Yeah.
I don't think they actually give the name of the funding.
The publisher.
Publisher. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think they actually give the name of the publisher. It's just Montreal.
I think from the very beginning I was thinking, okay, they're probably alluding to Ubisoft, since Ubisoft is involved. The whole time they said Montreal, I was thinking Ubisoft, Ubisoft, Ubisoft.
Yeah, actually, you're probably spot on about that. But it's also a sad story because it's about this couple who started a game together and they actually get divorced in the middle of the game.
And then it ends up not being their game anymore.
It just morphs. Over the years, it shows us morphing into something completely different.
And I would even say that it comes down to it being like, okay, are we going to stick to the values of the original game that we created, or are we going to make money? And the two characters in this episode are Doc and Bean. Doc wants to do what he thinks is best for the game in terms of making money, but Bean wants her realized game concept to be what she wanted it to be from the beginning. And that's whenever they get divorced, would you say?
Yeah, yeah. And I think it just shows, it's not, what's the word? It's a metaphor for real life. Like, do you stick true to your passion or do you go corporate?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, it was doomed from the beginning.
It was. And then in the end, whenever you kind of see, oh, this is what the connection is between Dark Quiet Death and Mythic Quest. And by the end of the episode, it kind of just had me thinking, okay, what are they trying to say about Mythic Quest? Is this like, oh, Mythic Quest is doomed to the same fate as Dark Quiet Death? After finishing the series, I'm like thinking that's probably not true. But throughout this series, you do see that they do allude to whenever Bean was wrote Doc and Bean on the walls. And I'm like, oh, that's cute, but sad.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm glad they didn't go that direction. I feel like that would have been more of like a drama kind of direction.
I agree. Yeah.
But I will ask, I watched it the first time, I binged it, and then I did my rewatch recently to prepare for this recording. So I don't know how recent your memory is, but did you, after rewatching A Dark Quiet Death, did you pick up any of the Roscoe references?
I did. Didn't, it was David or Ian that had the Roscoe mug?
Yeah.
I noticed that.
Yeah, the mug, and I think there was a Roscoe plushie.
I think so, yeah.
Oh, God.
It's kind of bittersweet. Like, whatever, they're like, oh, Disney's getting involved, and this is becoming a child's show with plushies and just Roscoe. And I'm like, it's kind of bittersweet because Roscoe's cute, and this is kind of, like, funny for them to allude to. But seeing, oh, Roscoe came out of Dark Quiet Death, it's like, oh.
It has nothing to do with darkness, quiet, or death.
Exactly.
Like when there was a scene where Bean was upset about them adding, she had already like given up and said, okay, you can have loud guns in the game. Because it completely negates the quiet part, right? But it's still dark and you still face death and you can't win the game.
And then later the creators were like, okay, we're going to get rid of the flashlight. And I think they used the laser pointer and they're like, oh, it's still a light. And it just goes further and further away from what she pictured.
It was such a good episode. Very, very well written.
Mm-hmm. And I would say it was the first of the series that was more on the serious side. And it really got into the feelings. It got into my feelings.
Yeah. My other favorite episode from season one is actually... it wasn't part of the original season. This was technically a special. Actually, they had two specials. So this was the first one. Literally titled Quarantine. This is episode 10. And obviously, season one dropped right before the quarantine started. Lockdown happened March of 2020. So I'm not sure when exactly they recorded this, but it's an Apple TV production, right? So Apple had all their devices sent out to the cast so that they could record this episode in the Zoom kind of fashion.
So were they all in their houses when they recorded this?
I don't know if they were in their own houses or if they had like set up something special and did like social distancing and had something. I mean, maybe. I can totally imagine Rob McElhenney having a pool.
Yeah.
With the jet streams.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Oh my God. Remember when he was upset about him getting to the call first because it was a power move and Poppy was late. And he was like, he was telling David, no, I don't wait for her. She waits for me. I'm going to hang up and you call me back when she gets on.
That was a good way to start the episode.
And then he just takes off his spacesuit and then he's naked. And then he gets out of the...
It was so funny. And didn't it end up being where he did end up waiting for Poppy?
Yeah. Oh, and Poppy. Poppy was like, why am I wearing a bra? He's not wearing a shirt. And I'm sure all women can relate to this. It's always nice when you take off that bra.
Yes.
Free the tatas.
Free the tatas.
Oh, man, that was hilarious. But yeah, I enjoyed this episode a lot because it just makes you feel the feels. You're feeling humor, you're feeling friendship, you're feeling sadness because Poppy's from Australia, right? But she obviously can't travel back to be with her family right now. Everyone's in isolation. It's, it really hit the nail. Is that the right metaphor?
The nail on the coffin?
It really hit the nail on the coffin, and because we were all experiencing this. They really wrote the story right to help us, I guess, remind us of what that felt like, because it was the first time that we had all experienced this global pandemic in this fashion.
And I remember they also kind of alluded to the celebrities who are like, oh, we're in this together. And meanwhile, they're in their mansions and their pools, and it was just very, it was very spot on, like Chinlin mentioned.
And I liked the thing at the end where they set up the tennis ball. Ping pong.
Yeah, the giant Rube Goldberg.
Yeah, yeah. Wait, that's what it's called?
Yes, I had to do one in middle school.
Oh, nice.
It was fun but challenging.
Okay.
That scene gave me goosebumps, though. It was very impressive.
And CW, of course, is having technical issues, and you're like, fuck, is he going to mess this whole thing up?
It had you on the edge of your seat. Is he going to figure out his computer in time to do his portion of it?
Oh, that was good. F. Murray Abraham's really good.
Yes, he is.
Like, I've never seen him in anything else. Amadeus is actually one of Isaac's favorite movies. He owns the DVD. Yeah, so he's probably seen more of F. Murray Abraham. But yeah, he plays a really good, funny, sort of toxic, old white, perverted white man.
Yeah, I would say you described him perfectly.
Yeah, but I'll get into more on CW's character when we get to season two. But I want to hand it off to Asha and let you talk about Everlight. That was the second special.
Okay, and so Everlight was the sort of the finale, but also the second special of season one. And I was just really impressed with the whole set design. They really went all out, and it just kind of inspired me. I'm like, okay, it's close to Halloween. I wonder if I can do something like this. But it was just really cool to see them set up this entire set, or even just like the workplace, like
they transformed the office,
the lighting, everything. They really did transform the office. It was so cool. And then everyone dressed up and like not Renaissance, but what would you, LARPing attire, and everyone had their characters. Carol, the HR lady, she was, what was she, a siren, and she was getting drunk. And then I know we're going to get into this a little bit later, Chinlin, but I know you don't really like Joe, but I really enjoyed her. I thought she was super funny, and I thought she was really funny in this final season too, or this final episode.
She's a good villain.
She is, 100%. Yeah, I would call her a villain for sure. And she really, I would say they did a really good job of creating a very over-the-top character for her in this one, where she could actually be the villain and, quote-unquote, kill people. And so they did rounds of fighting. So they grouped people up, surprisingly. And then Brad didn't want to participate.
Oh, he didn't even show up in costume.
Yeah. So they pretty much went through the entire round, and then who died? Bradley had to replace, oh, David, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then at the very end, the show kind of turns, like, into, they use CGI for this. And it's really good CGI. Like, they put all their money into this episode. And Brad turns into, like, this demon. What was he? Did, like, a darkness?
The darkness monster.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Because darkness had taken over the kingdom.
Yes. And, I mean, he looked super cool. And Poppy and Ian had, like, actual armor and swords. Like, it really like something out of The Witcher or something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But I give this episode props because they did really finish season one with a bang. And like, if I ever owned a business or a company, I would absolutely make sure that we have a LARPing day.
It's a great way to just come together and celebrate, especially during this time, because, you know, the pandemic's still going on, but like, things are getting better. The vaccine is out there. Also, if you're listening and you haven't gotten vaccinated, go get vaccinated.
Please go get vaccinated.
It is free health care. Free.
In the U.S.? Come on.
Yeah. But anyways, things are loosening up a little bit, so people are coming together again, and it's another metaphor where a group of people work together to triumph over a darkness.
Everything about this episode was just really impressive, and you can tell they put a lot into it. And I think CW, he was watching from home because they wanted him to stay home in quarantine still.
Yeah, yeah. So they had a big screen for him. And like, when Brad showed up, and Brad was like, "What? I'm Brad from Monetization." And CW was like, "Oh, don't be that guy." like CW saying that to someone else.
Yeah. Like, come on, Brad.
But yeah, season one was great, and I want to mention one more thing that I thought was interesting in terms of, like, gaming culture that we saw in season one. This wasn't on either of our lists, but it turns out Pootie is Ian's son.
That?
Were you shocked?
I was shocked. It was a really weird reveal, but it was a good reveal.
And it also, like, I don't know if it, like, really helped Ian's character development, but I think it just helped us as the audience realize that at least Ian understood. He knows he wouldn't be a good dad.
I agree, like,
versus him trying to be involved but just neglecting his son. Like, he's acknowledging that he has been neglectful, and he is trying to do his best to at least provide support, financial support, for his ex-wife and his son.
What were your first thoughts when you kind of found that out?
Well, he's definitely very bad at adulting, so I think it makes sense that he knows that he wouldn't be a good father to someone. But it does suck for Pootie, obviously, whose real name is Brendan. Because the episode title is just Brendan, and I'm like, who the fuck is Brendan?
Oh, yeah, we find out at the diner. Yeah, it was, as I mentioned, you know, I was really surprised to see it, and I'm like, okay, we already knew Ian is kind of a douchebag, but I think this solidifies that. But, I mean, as you mentioned, he is trying, and I do think it was kind of unfortunate that after that episode, we kind of didn't really hear about Ian and Pootie's relationship at all after that. So I feel like they kind of just left us hanging on that one episode.
Oh, shit. Before that, when it was revealed that Pootie had hacked Mythic Quest, I think that was even more shocking to me than finding out that he was Ian's son. Wait, how did I not include that episode? Oh my god. It's the one where
the NPC.
The Dark, not the Dark Knight. The Black Knight?
I don't remember.
Shit, I watched this twice. How can I forget? That Knight character, the NPC. We're going to look this up really quick because it is bothering us. Okay, we're looking on IMDb, the episode summaries, and it is not being helpful.
No.
But when it's revealed that Pudi had hacked the Knight character. That was dope.
Yeah, that reveal too was really funny when Ion took his character's clothes off at the end to fight him.
That is such an Ion thing to do.
And I guess it was kind of like, it was foreshadowing to Ion and Pudi's relationship later. Do you think so?
I guess, yeah, because that happened at the very end, and then the next episode was about their relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. But otherwise, yeah, it was a solid, besides the first two episodes, it was a pretty solid season one.
I agree.
And next we'll go on to season two, and I think we both have the same episodes that we liked. I had four, but two of ours are the same.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so season two, not that the first half was bad, just that it didn't really stand out as much to me. But I will say, before I jump into these episodes, it was nice to see Ashley and Dana get together.
It was. And Carol kind of witnessing their first kiss, and she was like, don't fuck in the office.
Oh, Carol. Carol's great.
She was. Yeah. Her, them kind of, like, Dana and Rachel were kind of just dragging her into their relationship problems throughout the first and second season, right? And so it was kind of funny. Carol was there whenever they had their first kiss and they finally got together. And that kind of just added, like, a little, it made it a little bit more funny. But it was a great scene.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm glad they finally got together because it was it made sense. They were working together in very close quarters. Like, literally, they were sitting in a room and they sat on a couch next to each other every day and played the same game every day to look for bugs.
It's inevitable that they would have gotten together.
Yeah. So one of my favorite episodes of season two is episode five. So right in the middle. Please sign here. And I bring this up because, like I said, Carol is underrated, but she's like, she's total boss, total badass in this episode. She's like, okay, so everybody had to take this, like, required, what, clinical personality quiz that labels everyone as a certain type of animal or creature. And obviously, our main characters haven't signed their fucking papers, and it's the end of the day. And Carol's like, I need your signature. No one leaves until you sign. And besides, you know, Ion being all like, I'm the lion, I'm the alpha. And David thinking he was a wolf. besides the hilarity of that, I will say, I learned a new term because when I was watching this with Isaac, he was like, oh, this is a bottle episode. And I was like, what's a bottle episode?
I've never heard of that either.
So a lot of TV shows, I guess, I don't know how common this is now, but I guess back in the day when you had shows come out on TV, you know, like once a week and stuff, you know, the seasons were longer and you always had those filler episodes.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I think the bottle episode was supposed to be a type of filler, or like it was supposed to like keep costs down, because it's called a bottle episode because the entire episode takes place in one set.
Oh, okay. That
so this sense. One was where they were just in the main office, right when you open up the elevators, that main area.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I learned something new. And now you learned something new, too.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, and I liked how they just, I don't know, it was very interesting to see them all, like, yelling at each other once again about something so trivial. It's like, who cares what animal you got?
It really shows us how difficult they were, like, All they had to do was sign off. They already took the quiz. All they had to do was sign. And then they were just giving Carol the most, like, the hardest time. And then on top of that, yeah, they were fighting with each other. Like, Joe and Brad, shark versus, what was Brad?
Mouse.
Yeah, and that turned into a whole showdown.
Also, I don't see him as a mouse.
I don't either.
Oh, but Joe was definitely a shark.
100%.
Yeah. So I liked that one, and I'm going to let you talk. What did you like about it?
I thought David was, he just really dragged out being a wolf, which we find out later. He did his whole set, questionnaire incorrectly, opposite, and so he also ended up being a mouse. But he still stayed strong to his wolf character. And from the first time you see him on screen, so when he finally leaves, he just drags it out. But it was so comical.
And I just want to point out, David as a character, he's such a child in a way. Like in the show, like, Ian is dad and, like, Poppy is mom. Once Ian has promoted Poppy to co-creative director, right? Like, David is kind of like this child with issues, and he sees them as a mom and a dad. And whenever they're bickering, he kind of, like, it makes him feel upset. Because when they're bickering, they're not getting any shit done. And then he's worried about Montreal calling him.
And he even calls Poppy mommy multiple times, right?
Yeah.
He definitely has issues, but he's a really good character.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I can't imagine an executive producer of a gaming company having that kind of personality.
It makes me wonder how he got the job in the first place.
Right? Okay, so I'll touch on the other two episodes I really enjoyed because they're kind of a two-parter. But this is where we start to learn more about CW. So episode 6 is called Backstory. And episode 7 is called Peter. So Backstory is where we go back to the 70s and we see CW for the first time as a young writing lad with ambition and all that good stuff. But, you know, he's a stubborn motherfucker who doesn't realize that his writing wasn't all that great to begin with.
Which was surprising to find out, too, because they really just built up his talent so much throughout the series. And you're like, oh, he's not even great.
Yeah. So it makes you wonder, how did he go from a crappy writer to this amazing writer? Obviously, it takes time and years of practice and experience, but we learn that young CW, whose real name is actually Carl, like, I don't know where the W comes from. Maybe it's his middle name. But young Carl actually, like, published his first book, but it wasn't really his first book, because another author, he gave a draft of his first book to this famous author, and this famous author kindly with, like, quotation marks, because he did Carl a favor, but the way he did it was kind of like, ooh, ouch, burn, how he rewrote his entire draft.
Yeah, every line was red ink where he went back and rewrote it.
Yeah, yeah. And I was shocked. I was, because his note to Carl was, feel free to use this. It's your book. And Carl was like, oh. I'll just use it.
And, sorry, real quick, what was the love interest's name?
God damn, I watched this yesterday. Anne,
yes.
Anne.
Yes, and she knew that the final product was not Carl's. She knew, and she pointed it out to him. It was just very, like, in a very passive-aggressive way, but she knew, just like we knew.
And, yeah, it was awkward, but, like, it had to happen because she was the only one who knew the truth, but she didn't out him.
Oh, that's very true. That is a good point.
Yeah. So she kept that secret to her grave.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they weren't friends anymore at that point, I would say she was a pretty good friend to him.
Yes, I agree.
Even though she disagreed with him.
No, she really did her best to help him out. Like, she gave him the criticism he needed, but I mean, we all could use that criticism, and CW didn't really take it very well, but, you know, she was just trying to help him become a better writer from the beginning.
Yeah. And I want to mention one really quick thing in backstory. So a minor character is Lou. Lou is in season one. Lou is this other game tester who comes in, right? And Lou is played by this writer named Craig Mazin. I bring Craig Mazin up because he wrote the HBO show Chernobyl, and we actually covered Chernobyl like 2 years ago, and it's one of Isaac's favorite shows of all time. It's a limited series. Anyone can go back and listen to the Chernobyl episodes, but Craig Mazin is an excellent television writer, and I love that he comes back in season two to play a different character, and it's in this episode, Backstory, in the past, where he plays this magazine publisher guy who's obviously rude and thinks he's the shit and thinks that young CW is, you know, he's just an employee who I underpay, right? It's funny because I rewatched this episode and remember when CW came across that television with the video game?
Yes.
What's that called? I forget.
Pong.
Pong?
Right? Yeah.
Okay. He sees Pong and something sparks in his brain and he's just like, oh my God. Oh my God. I have envisioned this new type of interactive storytelling, and he's explaining it to the magazine publisher guy and his two friends, and they look at him like he's crazy.
Little do they know.
yeah, because what he has foreshadowed is video game storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And so Craig Mazin's character, the magazine publisher, this is so ironic. I love it so much. He is like, TV is shit. What are you talking about? Because they assume that CW is talking about television writing.
Right.
Yeah, because he saw something on the TV. But it was actually a video game, and I thought it was so ironic because Craig Mazin's character saying, TV is shit, is because he's a TV writer himself in real life.
That is really funny. Yeah. Wow.
He played a really good game tester, too, in season one. Like, he really nailed the creepy dude, the creepy dude down.
Yeah, his character was obnoxious, and both of his characters were obnoxious in different ways.
Yeah, so I enjoyed Backstory. It leads us right into the next episode called Peter, and one of his other friends was Peter. Peter and Anne got married and had kids and everything, so we're back in the present. And CW and meets up. He goes to Peter's house because Peter's like dying, but like Peter's kid kind of like set them up. So they're both like stubborn because of they were a group, and CW leaving broke up the group. So they kind of just have to hash out their issues and stuff. But I thought it was a very good episode. I thought it was very well written. Like, you can tell both guys were just old white dudes with their egos, stubborn egos.
Yes. And one thing that I thought was interesting that came out of this episode was, what's Ashley Burke's character's name again?
Rachel.
I can never remember. What came out of this episode with Peter and Carl was Rachel being like, okay, even though this book was like bad, it was still good, and now I want to become a writer. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it was at the very end.
It was? Okay, yeah. I thought that was really neat.
She read Peter's book, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and she was giving critique about why it was so bad.
She said, I think she said, like, you in his book, you hate the main character. I don't remember why. She said you hate the main character, but it still made her, like, feel these emotions, and she thought it was still written well.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so it made her want to become a writer in the end.
That's very impactful.
I agree.
Yeah.
My other favorite episode, we both enjoyed this, was the finale, the season 2 finale, titled TBD.
I did think this episode was, I would say this was a really good way to end a second season. It really shows Poppy and Ian's relationship here. I mean, you definitely see it throughout the series, especially in the quarantine episode. But here, it's like, oh, these two really are best friends. Like, they're both, we're leaving Mythic Quest and we're going to start this new game together. And Ian is even like, Poppy, we're going to use your idea. You have a great idea. And it's just them sticking through it and leaving the game, which this entire show is based off of. And then I also just really thought this was a bold decision for the writers, in which they're having these two main characters just leave. And then I was like, oh no, like, I'm like, what are they going to do? What are they going to do at Mythic Quest? And then David was just like, all right, we got to hire another, what were their roles again?
Creative director.
Yes. And they're like, preferably one. So I just thought it was a really neat way to end the season 2. And honestly, I would be, I hope that they do have a third season, but I do think this was a good way to end this series if they don't create a season 3.
Hey, listener, it's Chin Lin from the future. Well, the future of this recording, but technically the past of when you're hearing this episode. So, we have a minor correction here. Actually, major correction. Season 3 and 4 of Mythic Quest is actually going to be here. I don't know when, but on October 21st, Variety.com announced that there will be, in fact, a Season 3 and 4. The show was renewed at Apple. So yay, more Mythic Quest to come, but we had recorded a bit early, so we had thoughts on how we thought the show was doing pretty well with just the two. So, just so y'all know.
I will say, I do agree with that part, that it was a great way to wrap up the, not just the season, but the series. But I will say, I don't think they're going to do a season 3. I haven't heard of anything. However, they can always do a spin-off show.
I was thinking that too.
They could just call it Hera.
Literally, yes. I was thinking that too. And I hope they do that.
I know. It's amazing. I really hope they do that too. But I mean, as of right now, we don't know for sure if they'll do the spin-off or do a season 3. I think the spin-off makes more sense because the show is called Mythic Quest. But if the two main characters are making a new game, it's not really Mythic Quest anymore.
But I do also wonder, maybe it'll... Because we can't just leave the other characters, you know, I guess... Well, I guess unless you would say their stories are kind of done. Dana and Rachel, specifically Dana, she... Poppy and Ian agreed to pay for her school if she learns how to code. And then she comes back to work for Mythic Quest. But all in all, I guess that that the other characters, their stories are done in a way, but Ian's and Poppy's is still going.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I want to add one more thing for this episode. It ties up so perfectly with the pilot, because in the pilot, Poppy is like upset because she came up with the shovel idea and she was so excited to introduce it to the game to the public because it was her thing. Like, Ian had this like metaphor where I want to paint something and you're my favorite paintbrush, so Poppy's the paintbrush,
right?
Yeah, but she's the favorite paintbrush, but she's creating his dream, not her own. So in that final season 2 finale where Ian decides, okay, we should do your idea, but it's not really going to work for Mythic Quest. Mythic Quest was really my baby to start. And now we're going to move on and work on your baby.
It's really cool that is Aang, like, just giving her the reins. And it's just really sweet the way their relationship kind of evolves, or that we see it evolving.
And I'm so glad they never got together. If they had gotten together, it would have completely ruined their dynamic.
I agree. Whenever the sex dreams came, which we'll talk about in a second, I was like, oh God, is this going to be the beginning of this? But I agree with that 100%. I'm glad they did not get together either.
Yeah. Although I will say the sex dream thing was kind of funny.
It was funny. No, it definitely made me laugh.
Okay. Real talk. Back at the company that you and I worked at previously,
mm-hmm.
I did have a sex dream about someone.
Okay, I know who it would have been.
Wait, do you?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. His name starts with an E.
Yes. Yes, okay. I know.
Okay, well, I wasn't sure because I had a crush on our boss's boss, too. Not, like, during the time that I worked there, but, like, when I first met him in the interview.
Yeah, no, he was cute, too, actually.
Yeah, I was actually, I woke up from having that dream, and I was like, whoa, why? But, yeah, just... sex dreams about someone you work with is totally a common thing to have.
And what did they describe it in Mythic Quest? It was just about that having that control or that power?
Yeah, yeah. So Dana kind of psychoanalyzes it, and she tells Poppy, well, it's a sex dream about Aang, but you're not... It's just your subconscious telling you that he still has power/authority over you. And your subconscious is just portraying it as a sex dream.
Do you think that's the case? That was the case for you?
Oh God, no, no, no. I just thought he was cute, like handsome with nice eyes, even though he was annoying.
It's funny because I do remember you complaining about him every once in a while, but I also remember you being like, "Oh yeah, I used to have a crush on him."
Okay, no, that's good times. Okay. So we're going to transition to talk about the not-so-great things. What are some aspects of Mythic Quest that we did not enjoy? I have two. They're character-specific, but I want to mention one more thing since I briefly mentioned our former workplace. Mythic Quest as a company, even though you are a video gamer, you've been gaming for almost your whole life, would you even want to work for a video game like Mythic Quest, given the crazy busyness, the not so great working hours, the kind of toxic leaders that we see?
I've always wanted to work for a publisher. I've applied at Ubisoft so many times, more times than I can count. But kind of just looking back on it, like, I even worked at GameStop for like a month back in high school, and I felt like I was treated lower, and I'm pretty sure it was because I was a girl. And then, you know, just seeing the whole recent thing with Blizzard, you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Just seeing all that, and just like how women in general are treated in just like the gaming community and like developers or publishers. And I'm like, I don't want to be a part of that. And it would come down to me, okay, if I do want to get into this space, I'm going to need to learn how to create my own video game and just start from there. But no, it is really an absolutely toxic work environment. And I mean, more ways than one. I mean, especially for women. And I do, Mythic Quest does definitely like allude to that. They, especially the whole episode, whenever they are at the convention and the group of girls comes in and David has to show him all the women that work at the company, and he was just struggling to find them because Poppy wasn't there. And I mean, it's like, okay, yeah, no, that's accurate. I mean, I've never worked at one or been to one, but no, I'm sure this is accurate. And so, short answer, no. I would not want to work in a place like that.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that specific episode you brought up, how David was struggling to find someone, a female employee, to talk to the girls about what it's like to work in the gaming industry. Like, it was a little awkward because it's like, I know they're mentioning a point, but like, to these young girls, they're just like, oh, that's what it's like.
Exactly, yeah. And I mean, even with when they finally got Dana to talk to them, I didn't really think it was as impactful as it could have been for that reason.
Yeah, although I will say that was a good episode for Dana, because that was when she was promoted to being like their in-house streamer.
Yes.
Yeah, so she wasn't testing anymore, but like, yeah, I would say they tried to make an impact at the end, but it didn't quite work out.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but I really do hope things get better just in general for the gaming industry, for women in the industry. And it's... Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say me too. Me too.
I hope that we still have more organizations like Girls Who Code to help kind of usher more women into male-dominated industries, such as the gaming industry.
I think it'll happen. I mean, I think it still has a long way to go since things like the incident at Blizzard is still happening. I think it'll happen for a while, but I mean, I do think we'll get there eventually.
So, two things I didn't like. Season one, Jo. She was annoying, annoyingly conservative, which I know is the character they're going for, but I like that episode, season two. No, that season one, episode two, where she sends that suicide note to Pootie. I was like, come on.
That was pretty extreme.
That was extreme, and she's the new girl.
I would say that's definitely, it's always Sunny humor, though. I would say that doesn't surprise me there.
Okay. Okay. Well, now it makes me not want to watch the show, even though I didn't want to watch it before. I
totally get it.
Okay. Season one, Jo, just didn't have any regard for other people's feelings. I mean, she kind of stays that way in season two, but I feel like season two, Jo, was more digestible for me as an audience.
I could see that, yeah.
Yeah. And then the other thing I didn't like, season two Poppy. Once she becomes co-creative director, I feel like she does more yelling.
She got noticeably meaner, and I noticed that too.
Yeah, she got way meaner, and she was super mean to Dana, which I feel like makes no sense, because in season one, as we just talked about, her idea was to have Dana be promoted to the in-house streamer. Like, why would you have the idea to promote someone to that level if you didn't have, like, some sort of respect for them?
Yeah, that's a good point.
So the fact that she was so mean to Dana in season two, kind of just treating her like trash, like, oh yeah, you're my chauffeur because I don't drive.
Do you think whenever the writers created the first season, they had in mind that they were going to make Poppy meaner in the second one?
I don't know.
It does kind of make me think, okay, they were probably just writing as they were going along. Like, they probably didn't plan to make Poppy that mean in the second one, but that's probably just how her character kind of evolved to. But I didn't like it either. I thought that was weird.
Okay. Yeah. But those are my two main quips.
And then for me, going back to season one, I just, as Chinlin mentioned, I just didn't really care for the first couple of episodes. I didn't really think they were funny. I thought that the characters were just, they were like forced to feel more relatable, and just kind of the jokes that they were making. It was like, oh, okay, come on, y'all kind of just did something better here. But what kept me in the loop was that, okay, this is a show about game developers, and, you know, I did really like how much they alluded to, like, the Ubisoft games and the games that I knew, like For Honor, Assassin's Creed. They even threw in some not Ubisoft video games in there. And I was like, okay, this is pretty neat. So I'm going to give this one more try. And by episode three, dinner party, sorry, I did really like it. And I was hooked. But yeah, for sure, I did not like those first two episodes.
Oh, shit. I just remembered. What were those video game Easter eggs you were going to tell me about?
Honestly, those are the only two I can think of right now.
Okay, what were they? I forgot.
It was For Honor and Assassin's Creed. There was a lot of Assassin's Creed. So both of those are Ubisoft games.
The knight character alluding to Assassin's Creed? Because I feel like the way he was drawn in the game Mythic Quest looked kind of similar to an Assassin's Creed character.
I didn't see it.
Okay, maybe I'm confusing it with something else.
Maybe. I have to see him again.
League of Legends?
Maybe. I never played that one.
One of Isaac's friends loves to play that game.
I have some friends that like it too.
Okay.
Victor loves it.
Never. Victor. Okay, sorry. Continue.
Thank you. Okay. And then secondly, I did think it was weird whenever they go to the convention and they're scouting for someone to stream for them in place of Pootie. And Poppy finds this girl who created this video game. She created it, right? At the convention?
I think so.
Yeah. And then Poppy was like, okay, I'm just going with my gut here, but I think you'd be perfect to be our streamer. And the girl is like, oh, I can finally get to 200 followers. And Poppy's like, you don't even have 200 followers? And then she walked away before the girl got to finish talking. And so then later, Poppy was like, oh, no, Dana would be perfect. And it's like, Dana doesn't have any followers. She's not even a streamer. So I just didn't understand why they would choose Dana but not this other girl. And then later, you know, whenever after Dana becomes their like in-house streamer, it doesn't even last that long. She's like a streamer for a few episodes, and then it's just very short-lived. So I just thought that kind of just ended up being a really weird like side plot. Do you have any opinions on that one?
I didn't feel like it was weird. The subplot as a whole, I didn't think it was weird. I thought it made sense. Like, from a business standpoint, if you have a partner who's a famous gaming streamer and they leave you, they break their contract and leave you for your competitor, I think it makes sense to hire someone in-house. However, that does mean when Dana was outed as the in-house streamer, she lost all cred.
Oh, that's true. I guess I wish that she could have been their streamer for longer. I wish that they would have given her more time to be that streamer before kind of just like, oh, this isn't happening anymore.
I get you.
Cool. And then finally, in season two, what we just mentioned earlier, Poppy's sex dreams. I thought that was weird, too. And I was like, oh, my God, is Poppy and Ian going to get together? And I thought that's what that was going to. I'm glad it didn't. I'm so glad it didn't. But
it made you think. Is this like a foreshadowing?
Yes, I was mad. But like you mentioned, the dreams themselves were pretty funny.
And David had the same dream.
Oh my God, that's true. I'm probably going back to his daddy and mommy issues.
Oh my God, ew. Oh man. Is there anything else you can think of that you want to touch on before we end?
I think they wrapped up season two very well, or even the series in general, and I really hope that there will be a spinoff called Hera, so fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. Make it happen, Apple.
Make it happen.
All right. Well, until next time, y'all.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Bingeables podcast.
Leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you enjoy listening to our podcast, please consider giving us your support on Patreon for as little as $1 a month. Just visit us on patreon.com/bingeablespod. That's patreon.com/BINGEABLESPOD. pod.
You can connect with us on Twitter at BingeablesPod, or you can email us at BingeablesPod@gmail.com.
Until next time. And the music you're listening to is Shaving Mirror by Kevin MacLeod.